The following essay was originally aired in 2004. You're listening to The Natural World. I'm John Cooney. Journal entry, February 7th, 10:30 a.m. Northern Willamette Valley, Champouy State Park. Sturdy pillars covered in ashy gray, twisted, deeply furrowed bark line the near bank of the broad chocolate-brown river. Almost 5 feet in diameter, these trees are the embodiment of steadfast durability and perseverance. Mud deposited by recent flooding coats the lower trunks and surrounding blackberry bramble. Huge, dominant black cottonwoods like these were once common in the gallery forests that attended the Willamette River on its northerly course through the valley. They are among the tallest and most massive broadleaf trees in the Pacific Northwest. Black cottonwoods can live for up to 200 years. The crowns of mature trees reach 175 feet into the humid atmosphere. In death, their rotting trunks provide homes for woodpeckers, great horned owls, wood ducks, flying squirrels, raccoons, and a variety of songbirds. A double-crested cormorant moves upstream, skimming the flat surface of the river in frenzied crook-necked flight. American crows squabble persistently, broadcasting their guttural chaos from the treetops. Clumps of moss rain down from the canopy, pulled from the higher branches by the crows searching for something palatable beneath. A bewick's wren walks up the corky moss and lichen-covered bark, stopping to inspect each crevice for a hiding insect or an egg cluster. 18 miles above Willamette Falls and a short distance below the mouth of Chehalem Creek, where it smears a yellow streak in the meandering Willamette, there was almost 2 centuries ago a rare riverside opening in the gallery forests that lined the shores of the Wilderness Waterway. In this unlikely place, a few singular events radically altered the course of modern Oregon history. The repercussions were both profound and ironic. When fur trappers first visited the area in 1811, the Kalapuya name for it was Champouic. Fringed by forest, it was the northernmost extremity of a series of prairies that extended southward along the east bank of the Willamette, almost to the Indian village of Chemeketa, 25 miles distant. The Willamette Post was established here in 1813 to serve the trappers. A few of them decided to settle and establish farms. The area to the south became known as the French Prairie due to the ethnicity of the majority of retired trappers. In 1841, wolf meetings were held to discuss predator control. Eventually, the meetings' agendas drifted toward the creation of a government. On May 2, 1843, settlers voted 52-50 to establish a provisional government linking it with the United States. The next year, the government's seat was moved to Oregon City. Champouy's prime location on the river made it a regular stop for steamboats and stagecoaches. By 1860, the town had grown to 30 buildings and a population of 200. During November of 1861, the Willamette Valley watershed experienced an unprecedented rainfall. On December 2nd, the river rose above its banks. Over the next 2 days, the inundated lowlands from Albany north bore a raging torrent, sucking under and sweeping away everything in its path. The village of Champouy lay beneath 7 feet of swirling waters. Paradoxically, this promising western metropolis and early seat of government is now park and grazing land on the quiet edge of intense urbanization. A jumping fish leaves a brief echo of radiating circular waves on the tranquil surface of the river. The first yellow-green leaves of Indian plum burst from winter buds. A synchronous flock of 200 Dunlin moves upriver. They're near enough so I can sense the collected beat of their wings. Brown pelicans seem to have decided to stay along the mid and northern coast of Oregon for the winter, as they have done over the last 2 years. However, with El Niño conditions developing this winter, they are not faring as well for food as in previous ones. The food situation is even worse in California, where they would normally winter. As a result, some pelicans are starving to death, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has issued a press release advising people not to feed the pelicans, even if the birds appear to be begging. People don't understand food requirements of the birds and may feed them inappropriate foods that could kill them. Human-fed birds that survive risk losing their normal fear of humans and becoming adapted to begging humans for food in the future. If you have sightings or events you would like to report or suggestions of areas you would like to see profiled, you can send me email at John Cooney, that's John with an H, C-O-O-N-E-Y at msn.com.